Chapter 8. The cop's name was Pellegrino, like the sparkling water, although he didn't say that. I got the impression that people drank from the tap in that part of Mississippi. On reflection, it was no surprise he stopped for me. Small-town cops are always interested in unexplained strangers heading into their territory. The easiest way to find out who they are is simply to ask, which he did, immediately. I told him my name and spent a minute on my cover story. I said I was recent ex-military, heading to Carter Crossing to look for a friend who might be living there. I said the friend had last served at Kellam and might have stuck around. Pellegrino had nothing to say in response to that. He just took his eyes off the empty road for a second and looked me up and down, calibrating, and then he nodded and faced front again. He was moderately short and very overweight. Maybe French or Italian way back, with black hair buzzed short and olive skin and broken veins both sides of his nose. He was somewhere between 30 and 40, and I guessed if he didn't stop eating and drinking, he wasn't going to make it much beyond 50 or 60. I finished saying my piece, and he started talking, and the first thing I found out was that he wasn't a small-town cop. Garber had been wrong, technically. Carter Crossing had no police department. Carter Crossing was in Carter County, and Carter County had a county sheriff's department, which had jurisdiction over everything inside an area close to 500 square miles. But there wasn't much inside those 500 square miles except Fort Kellam and the town, which was where the sheriff's department was based, which made Garber right again, in a sense. But Pellegrino was indisputably a deputy sheriff, not a police officer, and he seemed very proud of the distinction. I asked him, "How big is your department?" Pellegrino said, "Oh, not very. We got the sheriff, who we call the chief. We got a sheriff's detective. We got me and another deputy in uniform. We got a civilian on the desk. We got a woman on the phones. But the detective is out sick long-term with his kidneys. So it's just the three of us, really." I asked him, "How many people live in Carter County?" "About 1,200, he said, which I thought was a lot for three functioning cops. Apples to apples, it would be like policing New York City with a half-sized NYPD. I asked, "Does that include Fort Kellam?" "No, they're separate," he said, "and they have their own cops." I said, "But still, you guys must be busy, 1,200 citizens? 500 square miles?" "Right now? We're real busy," he said. But he didn't mention anything about Janice Mae Chapman. Instead, he talked about a more recent event. Late in the evening the day before, under cover of darkness, someone had parked a car on the train track. Garber was wrong again. He had said there were two trains a day, but Pellegrino told me in reality there was only one. It rumbled through at midnight exactly, a mile-long giant hauling freight north from Biloxi on the Gulf Coast. That midnight train had smashed into the parked vehicle, wrecking it completely, hurling it way far up the line, bouncing it into the woods. The train had not stopped. As far as anyone could tell, it hadn't even slowed down, which meant the engineer had not even noticed. He was obliged to stop if he struck something on the line, railroad policy. Pellegrino thought it was certainly possible the guy hadn't noticed. So did I. Thousands of tons against one, moving fast. No contest. Pellegrino seemed captivated by the senselessness of it all. He said, "Who would do that? Who would park an automobile on the train track? And why?" "Kids," I said, "for fun." "Never happened before, and we've always had kids." "No one in the car?"
"No, thank God. Like I said, as far as we know, it was just parked there."
"Stolen?"
"Don't know yet. There's not much of it left. We think it might have been blue. It set on fire, burned some trees with it."
"No one called in a missing car?"
"Not yet."
I asked, "What else are you busy with?" And at that point, Pellegrino went quiet and didn't answer, and I wondered if I had pushed it too far. But I reviewed the back and forth in my head and figured it was a reasonable question, just making conversation. A guy says he's real busy, but mentions only a wrecked car. Another guy is entitled to ask for more, right? Especially while riding through the dusk in a companionable fashion. But it turned out Pellegrino's hesitation was based purely on courtesy and old-fashioned southern hospitality. That was all. He said,
"Well, I don't want to give you a bad impression, seeing as you're here for the first time, but we had a woman murdered."
"Really?"
I said. 2 days ago," he said.
"Murdered how?" And it turned out that Garber's information was inaccurate again. Janice Mae Chapman had not been mutilated. Her throat had been cut, that was all. And delivery of a fatal wound was not the same thing as mutilation. Not the same thing at all, not even close. Pellegrino said,
"Ear to ear. Real deep. One big slice. Not pretty."
I said, "You saw it, I guess."
"Up close and personal. I could see the bones inside her neck. She was all bled out, like a lake. It was real bad. A good-looking woman. Real pretty, all dressed up for a night out, neat as a pin, just lying there on her back in a pool of blood.
Not right at all." I said nothing out of respect for something Pellegrino's tone seemed to demand.
He said, "She was raped, too. The doctor found that out when he got her clothes off and got her on the slab. Unless you could say she'd been into it enough at some point to throw herself down and scratch up her ass on the gravel, which I don't think she would be."
"You knew her?"
"We saw her around."
I asked, "Who did it?"
He said, "We don't know. A guy off the base, probably. That's what we think."
"Why?"
"Because those are who she spent her time with."
I asked, "If your detective is out sick, who's working the case?"
Pellegrino said, "The chief. Does he have much experience with homicides?"
"Gee," Pellegrino said, "the chief is a woman."
"Really?" "It's an elected position. She got the votes."
There was a little resignation in his voice, the kind of tone a guy uses when his team loses a big game.
"It is what it is."
"Did you run for the job?" I asked.
"We all did," he said, "except the detective. He was already bad with his kidneys."
I said nothing. The car rocked and swayed. Pellegrino's tires sounded worn and soft. They set up a dull baritone roar on the blacktop. Up ahead, the evening gloom had gone completely. Pellegrino's headlights lit the way 50 yards in front. Beyond that was nothing but darkness. The road was straight like a tunnel through the trees. The trees were twisted and opportunistic, like weeds competing for light and air and minerals, like they had seeded themselves 100 years ago on abandoned, arable land. They flashed past in the light spill, like they were frozen in motion. I saw a tin sign on the shoulder, lopsided and faded and pocked with rusty coin-sized spots where the enamel had flaked loose. It advertised a hotel called Toussaint's. It promised the convenience of a main street location and rooms of the highest quality. Pellegrino said,
"She got elected because of her name."
"The sheriff?"
"That's who we were talking about."
"Why? What's her name?"
"Elizabeth Devereaux," he said.
"Nice name," I said, "but no better than Pellegrino, for instance."
"Her daddy was sheriff before her. He was a well-liked man in certain quarters. We think some folks voted out of loyalty. Or maybe they thought they were voting for the old guy himself. Maybe they didn't know he was dead. Things take time to catch on in certain quarters. I asked. Is Carter Crossing big enough to have quarters? Pellegrino said, Halves, I guess. Two of them. West of the railroad track or east? Right side, wrong side? Like everywhere. Which side is Killam? East. You have to drive 3 miles through the wrong side. Which side is the Toussaint's Hotel? Won't you be staying with your friend? When I find him, if I find him, until then I need a place. Toussaint's is okay, Pellegrino said. I'll let you out there. And he did. We drove out of the tunnel through the trees, and the road broadened and the forest itself died back to stunted saplings left and right, all choked with weeds and trash. The road became an asphalt ribbon laid through a wide, flat area of earth the size of a football field. It led through a right turn to a straight street between low buildings. Main Street, presumably. There was no architecture, just construction. A lot of it old, most of it wood, with some stone at the foundation level. We passed a building marked Carter County Sheriff's Department, and then a vacant lot, and then a diner, and then we arrived at Toussaint's Hotel. It had been a fancy place once. It had green paint and trim and moldings and iron railings on the second-floor balconies. It looked like it had been copied from a New Orleans design. It had a faded signboard with its name on it and a row of dim lights washing the exterior facade, three of which were out. Pellegrino eased the cruiser to a stop, and I thanked him for the ride and got out. He pulled a wide U-turn behind me and headed back the way we had come, presumably to park in the sheriff's department lot. I used the set of wormy wooden steps and crossed the bouncy wooden veranda and pushed in through the hotel door.